December for the Christmas holidays, then take off.
This is an early one.
Jesus, he's not talking about that.
Now, what about telling Ben?
Before the pressure myself.
Really pressure.
I would not call this horse a pressure. Now, let's look at his best friend. Let's make, just, if we set the rest of the day up right now, we won't go through this every time. Look at the bottom line on his chart. Second ahead, first ahead, that is not a presser. That's a horse fighting for the leader. The second race from the bottom, the horse was trying for the lead early, couldn't get it backed up. The next race, it was in the lead. The next race, it couldn't get the lead backed up. The next race, it was in the lead. The next race, it was in the lead. The next race, it tried for the lead. Two races later, it tried for the lead. This is not a presser, folks. A presser is one that can sit right off the lead and have some limp down the stretch. This is an early horse. It's also an early horse with no form at all.
That's right.
And we'll eliminate this horse when we get to the contenders. But right now, we're just going to look at it. Now, let me tell you how long this usually takes. This takes about a minute and a half. Okay. But because we're doing it a group exercise, it's kind of important for the rest of the day that we get this between us. Yes.
Yeah, I guess I'm confused on you with harder in terms of the okay. If you go for the first rule is better racing, and you only have one good sprint, really, 3 to 1.5 runs off, you know, and then you have to guess, even though it was a slow pace, I see the 46-3. Is that what makes you say that he's...
Yeah, look at his last two races.
Just because of that.
Sure, look at his last two races, first of all. Then drop down to the routes, and you'll see that the horse... Except for one race into one turn mile, all of the rest of the races, the horse was 4th or 5th in the routes against 46-4s, 47s. That translates
to a closure.
Yeah. That translates to a closure this spring. What about Road of Luck?
Well, he dropped off the star early.
Kind of staggers around, doesn't it? All right, this is an early horse. I'm going to move right through the rest of this now. What about Flying Lessons?
Early.
It's an early horse, isn't it? Can he press or is he early? He's early. What about Bolt St. Pat? What he's in this doing in this race, I have not a clue. This guy, this trainer, for those of you that aren't interested in trainers, this trainer has taken more horses, including Bedouin. He's taken more horses and taken them straight downhill than probably any two trainers that I'm aware of. Not that this horse was ever much. You don't see this. You don't see this kind of a move on guys like John Sadler. You don't see it on Ron Ellis. You don't see it on Gary Jones. You don't see it on those guys. You see it on John. Anybody want to pronounce that? Is it Cianci?
Yeah.
You see it on guys like this. Now, what is this horse? Just put slow down in the right hand side. Bedouin is sir. Yeah. Anybody want any bad news?
I can watch it.
All right, we'll do it.
Flying Lessons.
Yes.
It's in the front or in half of the race. Why is it not a front runner?
We called it early.
For a ball.
Yeah, we said there was no discussion.
Okay, you're right. Early.
Yeah, early is a front
runner. All right.
We'll get away from my designations. We're using ESP.
All right. All right.
Some bad news for some of you. It was a crusher for me. Is that Los Alamitos? It's not going to be an inter-track wagering site for Del Mar. That is a crusher for me. I didn't walk the ball right near it. Not for Hollywood, I'm not saying it. It's further, but it's an easier drive. Anyway, Los Al will not be carrying Del Mar. They want to wait and see.
Wait and see.
They have waited and saw on all of these sites. Indio, everyone, they've opened about 50% of what they had to have. Indio's even talking expansion now. San Bernardino's expanded. It's at least twice what it was originally.
You ought to try Del Mar with a barrel.
Oh, God.
Oh, but when they had the motor vehicle?
Right now, you ought to try that. The fair is open.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, the damn thing's inside.
That's horrible. All right, now let's go back to the race. Let's talk about contenders now. And we're going to start with Ann Justice. The reason we're going to start with Ann Justice is that Ann Justice is the consensus horse. And when you're doing a race like this, it's probably best to know what you gotta beat. Because if the handicappers are picking a horse like Ann Justice, if when you're finished with him, he looks like he's unbeatable, chances are this is a race you're gonna pass anyway, because the price is gonna be poor.
In a race like this, is the bottom of the barrel?
No, anyway, I'm sorry, any sprint race for claiming horses, but it's really a high-level race, where you know that all the horses can run some, it doesn't really make any difference where you start. But in almost all of the claiming races, start with the consensus horse, because that way it gives you a feel for what you're gonna try to beat. Now, if Ann Justice were drawn down on the inside, with other speed around him, this would be a great target for us to try to beat here. Now, he may be a little more difficult to beat here, but let's talk about Ann Justice for a moment. Because Ann Justice, first off, before we analyze these horses, is Ann Justice a contender at $10,000? Anybody that says no to that, has got a little problem. From your part-time chart, see, we said that this race, $10,000 race, generally, on average, is 1 in 111, right? What does that equate to at 6.5 furlongs? Just go to the part-time chart and read across that $10,000 line.
117.3.
117.3. So that 111 that we wrote on, now if you don't have copies of the part-time chart, we can get them later, okay? Because I suggest you work with them, because then it gives you a good feel for your contenders. So if we say that, so if we say that 117.3 is the par at $10,000, Ann Justice just ran 117.1. Okay, so the last race, even though it was run on the 13 even, track variance, okay, which may or may not have been fast or slow, I mean, without variance, it's pretty hard to tell. Nevertheless, it is at least 2 lengths better than the normal par at this level.
The 6 furlong interior was 110.
Okay, Ann Justice is clearly a contender. You can match the par. It is probably the speed of the field, and in fact, over its last two races, we're gonna do one other thing here, and that is right. What do you suppose this horse can get to comfortably and still survive as far as the half mile? What do you suppose is the number for this one? 45 and 1?
Yeah.
Well,
maybe
45. Now let's talk about its last two races. I mean, take a look at the last two races.
Yeah.
Since it managed to win last time, and actually ran very well the time before down in the two posts, neither of its last two races was it benefited by an outside draw. One, it was down in the two posts, it ran very gamely, then in the four posts, but it managed to clear the field, so it probably moved away from the rail a little bit. But nevertheless, let's look at this horse for a moment and see if it runs 45, if it's allowed to go 45 and 1 in here, won't he be really tough?
Never gone by a horse in his life.
Well, Claudia, please don't interject. I mean, these are personal feelings, and they're actually in a way of logic here.
He's never gone by a horse in his life.
Forget, well, until you decide, how can you say that there's other speed? This is the first horse we've dealt with. The very first horse. If no one else can go 45 and 1, he doesn't have to go by anybody. Now, I got to tell you, I hate Ann Justice as a racehorse, but you can't let that get in the way of your thinking process. But put down 45 and 1, because if he's allowed to go 45 and 1, and let's put down 22 flat also. Let's just put that down as if Ann Justice is allowed to go comfortably 22, 45 and 1, it can be very difficult to get because he doesn't have anybody in pass.
Yeah, what about that first quarter time? You're bringing it up now.
Okay.
So do you look at that as
well? Yeah. That's what we're going to try to do. Because now, if we get somebody else in here that's capable of going 21-3, Ann Justice is gone. And then Claudia's point is well taken. If somebody can go 21-3, that forces Ann Justice, who can also go 21-3, that forces him to do that. The minute he goes 21-3, he's now looking at probably 44-4. And the minute he does that, he's gone. He's not gonna survive, because he never does. But we'll start with the favorite in the race, Ann Justice, and we'll say that he's the front runner also. He can go 22-45-1, if he's allowed to do that, it would be really difficult to catch him. Does anybody have any problem with that conclusion at all? Okay. Now let's go to, can we now go to Tell Him Ben?
Yeah.
What would you like to do with Tell Him Ben? I beg your pardon? What makes you say that? July 17th, 87 in Hollywood. Let's talk about the condition of the horse. Okay.
He can go that fast, he went that fast on March.
Okay, now let's stop right there, because first of all, take the horse the way he is today, Claudia. So now you want to go back to March. Now, I'll accept that. I won't go back to 87. But I'll go back to March. Now what racetrack can you do that at? Okay, now let's take a look at Ann Justice at San Diego. What does he do? 21-1. 21-2, 21-1, 21-3. Does that tell you something about Santa Anita's quarter mile versus Hollywood?
Faster.
It is much faster. It's a good 2 lengths faster over there at the quarter. Let's stay here for a moment before we go any further, because we're going to eliminate Town Man. But I want to eliminate him with the understanding that he's not going to kill Ann Justice in this race. Can we do that?
Yeah.
All right. He's an early. We've designated him early. He clearly doesn't have the speed to get in front of Ann Justice. He also doesn't seem to have the speed to be within a length or so of him at the quarter. And a length at the quarter is pretty significant, because some of these horses can accelerate on a turn, and he's not one of them. Look at these last couple of races. Can we get rid of Telemann?
Yes.
All right.
Before he's going through.
Yes.
What about these workouts? Do you think this would influence you? Would be working all right.
No, actually, these workouts don't do a whole lot for me, because they're over at Santa Anita. Okay, Santa Anita is much faster. If these workouts were at Hollywood Park, I still would love them. I could break that one down. That wouldn't influence me at all. All right, Town Man, we're going to eliminate that. Does anybody in here have any trouble eliminating Town Man?
No.
Now, one thing I got to tell you here is that any one of these horses we eliminate on any given day can reach up and knock us down. The point that I'm trying to get across here is that if we're consistent in our handicapping and treat horses like this way every time, the one that comes up and pays $60 or $70, I mean, you look at it and say, gee, if I'd have done this, but the minute you start doing if I'd have done this, you begin to sacrifice consistency at the racetrack. You've got to be consistent. You've got to get the right kind of horse all of the time. And when you do that, you don't have these days when you win a couple of huge price races and then fall apart all the rest of your career. Okay, so now let's go right there. Rodent Luck. Now this is an early horse. The little back class. He's a front runner. And what do you suppose he might do? He could be a problem in here. Okay, because he's fresh. He's got a 35-1 the other day, best of morning at Hollywood, which is always a big work to have. He's been out for a year. But we don't want to bet him necessarily, but we want to consider what he might do to Ann Justice before we eliminate anybody. What can Roto Block usually get to the quarter?
About 45-2.
Quarter. He's pulling the wagon if he gets a 45-2 to the quarter.
22-3.
All right, let's get down to it. 22-3 at 6.5 furlongs, right? Now he managed, that is a winning race, 22-3, 45-4. What does that tell you about this horse?
Slower than Injustice.
Yeah, can't take a lot of heat, can he? If he requires 22-3, 45-4 for his only win, he's not really a solid frontrunner, is he? Now let's take a look at the race that he was asked to put out a little bit. Let's look at the very bottom race, May 16th of 87. He goes 21-4, and that cooks him, right?
That's the main race.
Pardon?
That's the main race.
What difference is it?
That's his first time up.
Yeah, but we're only going to use that as a start. Let me finish. Go up to his next race. That's his second time out. He tries to challenge or press a 21-4 again. What happened to him? Oh, no, don't make a lot of excuses for these horses. You miss out on traveling again with Birdman. Now, let's jump up to August 9th before he was laid off. This time down at Del Mar, which is, they run to the quarter roughly the same as, somewhere between Hollywood and San Diego. So if Hollywood runs 22, San Diego runs 21 and 3, Del Mar runs about 21 and 4. This is a 22, which is approximately the same as the 21-4 he was chasing in Hollywood. What happened to him this day? Now, we're not talking about his first start, nor are we talking about a race in which he was bumped. That was a very fast race that Brides and Vice won. But that chasing that 22 cooked him bad, didn't it? Now, is he going to chase a 22 in here?
Yeah.
Okay. But he can chase a 22, can't he? Okay. I'm going to leave it up to all of us. Okay.
He might be a good place, but...
I'm not so much interested in betting him to place. If I were going to bet him, I'd bet him to win. I would bet him to place. What's he going to do now to Ann Justice? Let's talk about this for a minute.
Phone puts a lot of heat on
him. Press.
All right. What would you say comfortably Rhoda Black can get to the quarter?
22.
His first race back, I'd say 22.
22 and 1. This is kind of critical. If he gets there in 22, Ann Justice is in trouble, right? If he gets there in 22-1, Ann Justice is still alive.
Right.
I'd love to beat Ann Justice in this race, but you're going to have to do it. You can't just fantasize.
22-1
seems to be the best.
All right, is it 22-1? Alright, if he does that, where does he come to the half in? 45, he gets there in his first start 45-1, then he gets there in 45, almost 45-3, then he's 45-2. Can we say safely 45-2?
Yeah.
Right. That's recognizing that he's been away for a while, it could be fresh. Now, is Ann Justice, how's Ann Justice looking right now against that one?
He's a better player than one thing.
Pardon me?
Good.
I don't just see him at 45-1. I'm looking at three lengths back at that 44-4.
Alright, then his is 45-2 up there.
That's a 45-2.
Well, if I look at 45-1, you're looking at only one race. That's his very bottom race. If you look at the second to bottom race, it's 45-3. If you look at the race you're looking at, it's 45-2. If you look at the July 22nd race, it's 46-3. If you look at the August 23rd, it's 46 flat. If you look at the July 2nd, it's 45-4. Why would you want him at 45-1? You have six races to choose from, and you're saying based on one of those six races.
Well,
that's...
Well,
let me just
support is capable of running that fast, not running that fast and winning. We're not talking about winning. We're talking about stronger fighting and adjusting. If he can run that fast, as you said yourself, horses that come on playoffs frequently run fast and fresh.
Okay, but what have you got?
Ann Justice down to 6 furlongs at 45-2.
I'm going to put a little screen in there to kind of shut you off here in a minute. The data here says that 45-2 is really about what he should run. See, what's happening is you're going to get killed at the racetrack if you're always one ending, and that's basically what you're doing with this horse. Chances are there's a very good chance he could run faster when he's fresh, and all it is a very good chance. The data says that 45-2 is about comfortable for him. Now we're not rocket scientists. I mean, we're not taking it right down to the nth degree here. But be careful when you speculate based on the what if. Chances are 45-2 is his record. Anybody want to add to that? Anybody want to go to a 45-1 with this horse?
Right.
And I'm just suggesting.
Well, if you use that bottom line, because that was the first race of his life, it would be comparable to being off 10 months.
Pardon?
Why can't he run back to the first race of his five?
Okay, I'm going to...
After being off 10 months.
Okay, I'm going to make one last statement, and we're going to forget this. And that last statement is, if you think that he can run back to that race, what's he doing in here for $10,000?
That's what I'm going to ask.
That's a good question.
But, I mean, that's the final, that's going to be the final point in here. This horse is running for $10,000 in his first lifetime race as a five-year-old. He didn't even get to the races until he was five.
Six.
No, he was five when he got to the races. Okay. His first lifetime start, he was 5 years old. And he started in the straight date race. As a six-year-old, after six lifetime starts, almost no racing at all, he's running for $10,000. Now, when you reach down and grab that bottom line, you are really, you're way out in Never Never Land with this horse. I'm not going to say, and I'm going to tell you one thing, it's not an exact science. This horse could go out and run 45 flat today. And I'll eat some crow, but all I'm, my point is that you've got to approach the race the way logic tells you, the way the data tells you to do it. Does anybody have any more problem with that? Anybody? What about flying lessons? All right. Okay, what do you suppose this horse can get to the quartering?
I think the second goal.
The Clydesdales can get to the quarter in 45.
That's 22
comfortably?
Yeah.
What makes you say 22? Look at all those races at Hollywood Park where you did 22.
Yeah.
Got news for you. That's using the old finish line.
Oh.
And they ran much slower to the quarter and to the half at the old finish line. Much slower. This horse, based on all of those 22 ones and 22s, is probably a 21-4.
You need to change the finish line so I can show it down.
Last fall, November.
November.
November the 87th.
Christmas.
Okay. You could probably get there, and this is a claiming horse. This is a little different than the horse we just dealt with for a long time. This is a claiming horse, and he belongs in claiming racing. He got very good for a while, and when horses get very good, this is a point I want to make now because I'll make it several times during the day. When you're talking about drop, I made it last time we had one of these sessions. And that is, horses dropping in class, you better take a long look at. Horses coming up in class are the kind of horses, especially horses that are being stepped up two levels by a decent trainer. Those are the kinds of horses you want to really grab hold of. Because what happens is the trainer's saying, I really like this horse, I'm not going to lose him for that lower price, therefore they're going to have to pay me and pay through the nose to get the horse. And that happens a week or so ago, a horse called Chili Hills raced two or three levels. A horse called Alaska Man's dropped two in the same race. They're both 2-1. Alaska Man is nowhere. The other day, for no apparent reason, Lance Manis stepped up. After losing at 25, he stepped up from 25 to 40. Wins by 8.5. He raised $8, right? That's the high figure in the race. Those are the kinds of horses you're looking for, because those are always telling you this horse is sharp, and anything you got, you've got good. I mean, if you look at it and say this horse is going to run 110, he's going to run 110. It's the droppers with the class edge, supposedly. It's the droppers you have to look at and say this one should run 110, but is he really going to run 110 because he's being dropped? That's the one you have to deal with. That's the thorny. The horses that are stepping up are the horses you know you've got, you know, if it says it here, you got it. I'm not telling you always to bet against the dropper. I mean, that would be foolish. But they're the tougher ones to figure out. But when they're dropping a couple, if they're running well at a higher level, if they're running well, and if they're in contention to win at the stretch call especially, and you look at it and say, well, geez, why don't they just leave him here? I'll probably win the next time. Those are the kind you really get worried about. When they look too good to be dropped, they're going to be too short in price, and they probably were too good to be dropped. That's just an aside. I want you to look at something now. Take a look at Flying Lessons. May 1st, 86. I'm not making a case for this horse. I'm making a case for a point I just made. Look at his race at the bottom. He wins easily for 12.5. Now watch his progression. He stepped up off that race to 16. He gets beat at 6-5. He's claimed and he steps to 20, which he has to do. Then he wins at 20, he's claimed again, he's up at 25. Then he wins again at 25, he stepped up to 40. He's in for 35 and it's 40. That's a two-level jump, right? And he gets beat a whisker. Then he steps up out of that into the non-winner series at Del Mar. And he runs super down there at 5-1. Then he begins to tail off and go back to where he's already. But that's the kind of horse you ought to be embracing when they're coming up that, when they're moving up that ladder, where they're being stepped up regularly, claimed, and stepped up again, and they're still running good races. That's the kind of horse you want, because they're going to pay more. The kind of horse you don't want is the horse that's being steadily dropped. And especially if they're running well. A horse that's not running all that well and they're dropped, you look at that and say, that horse needed to be dropped. But the horse that's running well, those are the ones that fool you, because everybody jumps on it. They look good enough to eat. Except that, believe me, they're not. Okay. Now line lessons. This man claimed the horse for $32,000 at Del Mar last year.
2 years ago.
Now he drops it all the way to 10. Now, can you do the math on it? Anytime you're ready to take one of these horses, do the math on it. Because Roger Stein drops horses a lot. But generally, when you do the math on that, you'll see that he claimed the horse at 10. Stepped it up to 16 or 20, drops it to 12.5. And you say, geez, look at that drop. Except, he paid 10 for it. If he loses it at 12.5, wins the purse, does all of those things. Do the math on all these things. Do the economics. Now let's look at this horse.
Just to the side.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I'm clear on it. You did the math on him. And he ran 62.5. Did he have that last race?
I think he won up to 8.
Yeah, 8. So you did the
Yes, they've really done well with that horse. He's game, but he just got beat by a better horse every day. The owner of this horse, these are regular clients of Bill Spahr. If they lose this horse today, they lose $22,000 on the purchase price.
And all that layoff time.
And all that time they had the horse on the farm, then all the training expenses for that. Now that is a huge negative. This horse is not what he was, right? But the other thing is, he's in for 10 because they think they can win with it in 10, too. So I mean, this is one you're gonna have to, that's why I hate these $10,000 races. There is nothing lower. When you deal with a $10,000 race at Hollywood Park, half the horses belong at 4. There just isn't a level at 4. All right, what do you suppose now flying lessons will get to the quarter on a normal basis?
21.4.
All right. Let's put him at 21.22. And the minute you do that, what have we just done to Ann Justice? No, you can't say you've done that. But certainly, you've got a built-in bias against Ann Justice. I hate him too.
I've been watching that horse for a while.
So do I. I hate him. He's a stubborn. But that doesn't change what we're doing here. Don't just look for reasons to jump on it, because what you wind up doing is jumping off from a lot of winners based on a personal value.
Well, as soon as it looks like I've got a lot of speed, like I can do a man.
Except he's generally the speedest feet. It just depends now. If he has to go 21-4, 21-3, he's dead. If he has to go 21-3, he's dead. If he has to go 21-4, there's still a possibility of this horse winning this race. I'll submit one last thing to you on Ann Justice before we go any further. I will pass, before I would bet Ann Justice in here, I will pass this race. Look at Ann Justice's last race. First of all, we've established that there's other speed in here, and he's certainly not going to be 3 or 4 lengths clear of the 22. Okay, that's a given right now. Would everybody buy that? Okay, he will not be 3 or 4 lengths clear with that correction. Take a look at his last race. This horse just won by 4, right? And he won very gamely. Now what he said then, the minute the horse won this race, he says that I am worth more than $10,000 clearly. I just buried a $10,000 field. Step me up. Put me at 12.5. Put me at 16. You got me at 16. You know. there, people are going to get out on this horse now, it's quit today, because of the race it won. So the, if you do the math on this one, you'll see that it's kind of a break even on it. But you're also going to know that he's not any better, that he's not as good as he looks probably, because they're not stepping him up. They'd be just as happy as if they lose the horse for 10, they about break even on the dollar thing. Maybe come out a little bit ahead. But they don't feel he's worth stepping up. And anytime you see a horse that wins by 4, 5, 6 lengths, win powerfully, you want those horses stepped up 1. Better than that, you want them stepped up 2 levels, what you really want to see. You want the trainer to make the statement for you. And Justice, on the other hand, is being left with $10,000 after winning by 4 in very good time, 2 lengths better than a par.
He's back in a week.
He's back in a week? That's a, in this case, I think that's a positive sign. Yeah.
Or it's a sign that Stein is getting to everybody.
That's right. Yeah. That's a good trainer, Sanford Schulman. I mean, he could win here, but I got to tell you one other thing. He won't be too disappointed if he loses the horse, or he wouldn't have left him in the camp. Okay, so now, Ann Justice is the favorite in the race. Flying Lessons and Rolling Luck both have the possibility, especially Flying Lessons, both have the possibility of pressing him to his 21-3, 21-4 capabilities. And if he does that, Ann Justice will win him around. Okay, Old St. Pat, can we just eliminate him?
Yeah.
Well, this race is going to take some time, but after this, we should be able to move it along pretty well. This is not a contender. It's Old St. Pat. Let's turn the page. We'll work from the inside. Let's look at end play.
Look at things in a little slightly different way than anybody else looks at them. Now, our performance, and we know this over thousands and thousands and thousands of races, in hundreds and hundreds of 20 race sequences, we've only had 4 losing sequences. And that's the Doc's number, starting back in 1975 until the present. Okay, think about that a second. 11 years worth of 20 race cycles, we've had 4 losing cycles, we've never tapped out. Okay. The Doc took $300 and ran into $149,000 in 5 years. Okay, there are 400 some odd creatures running around this United States and Canada right now who are either making their living or augmenting their living with what we're talking about. If you do not embrace the methodology at all, if you don't want to investigate it any deeper, just the insights we'll give you as to how to look at it in terms of reality will probably be enough to, give you the edge. Right now, just the betting 2 horses, I tell you what you want to do. Don't change a thing you're doing in your handicapping. Right? Don't change a thing you're doing. But when you handicap, pick the top 3 horses, top 3 or top 4 even. And you should, right, if you pick your top 4 horses, do you think this one's first, this one's 3, this one, write down 4 horses. Your top 2 horses should contain the winner 50% of the time. Your top 3 horses should contain the winner 70% of the time. And your top 4 horses, you should have the winner 80% of the time. That's minimum. That's absolutely minimum. All right? Okay. Now, we'll show you how to get 7% better at each hole. Okay? Our minimum expectation is 63%. In other words, if you wager in 100 races, you should win at least 63 of them. Your average mutual should be about $8.20. If you'll do this, if you will do your homework and pay the price and not go out to a racetrack and make a serious bet until you can do this, okay, if you'll do that, you'll win whatever you want to win, whatever your goals are. We'll show you how to attain your goals and how to set them tomorrow night. But you see, here's the point. At first, you'll do this in the privacy of your, den or kitchen table, or wherever you're comfortable, wherever you're in your adult state. But the one thing we're going to recommend that you do is not only be able to do it there, but go out to the racetrack, take a very small bankroll, unsubstantial bankroll, $100, $200, and actually do it in the environment that you'll be working in. You're going to find out it's different. Right? It's different. Different between doing things home and doing things out at the racetrack. You'll also, after a while, if you practice, your confidence will get so that how often does this happen? You handicap the night before, you see the scenario of the race, and you say, horse A is, looks like the winner, and horse B is coming in second. Now you go to the racetrack and you meet somebody who you respect, who's a pretty good handicapper. And he says, well, you know, he says, yeah, A has a chance, but yeah, I think the seahorse is real strong. And then he gives you an argument for it. And damn if you don't bet the seahorse. And what happens? A wins, exactly, right? How, has that ever happened to anybody? Yeah, okay. You see, here's the thing. What you violated, what principle of winning was the responsibility one? The doc mentioned the three R's of winning: reality, responsibility, and regression. Regression just means, it doesn't mean statistical regression, it just means regressing, going back over, you know, the past, and to use the knowledge of that to take into the future. And the doc will talk to us, and Tom Brohmer, hopefully. Tom, we're praying that he'll make it. He had to be out of Riverside to do a very distasteful thing tonight. And we'd like to have Tom talk to you about how to keep a model and how to handicap yourself. You're going to find out that there's three parts to this. The first part is you're going to have to handicap your track. The second part is you're going to have to handicap the horses. And the third and most important part is you're going to have to handicap yourself. Okay. So you're going to have to handicap the track. You're going to have to know the energy requirements and the energy demands. You're going to have to know what it takes to win at your track. All right. Then you're going to have to handicap the horses themselves. And then you're going to handicap the most important element in this, and this is yourself. Okay. There's a word, and a very simple word. It makes all the difference in the world. You see, think about the term horse player for a second. Horse player. Get the word play? Play. It's only money, haha, player. You go out to the racetrack thinking of yourself as a horse player, that's what you're doing. I'm not saying you can't win. You can obviously win certain days. But the point is this. If you go out as a horse race investor with a plan, with a method, and a betting method, and so on, right, you're prepared. You're going out there different than 95% of the people that go. In fact, 99% of the people that go. 99%. So you'll immediately put yourself in that 1%. Okay? Because you see, you're going out as a business person. And you're looking at this as an investment, a form of investment. Now, would you risk any of your investment capital on things that you didn't know about? In other words, if the salesman came in and said, look, I got this option on, this commodity option on coffee, and you can have 12,000 pounds of coffee at five, so, you know, we'll give you for $5,000, we'll give you an option for 3 months to, you know, buy 5,000 pounds of coffee at 70 cents a pound or whatever. Would you buy it? No, you'd ask a lot of questions, right? And then you'd probably want to look at, you know, find out somebody who's invested in it. You'd want to know about the company. You'd want to check them out. See, what happens is in your other life, if you will, I better not say this. Most of us behave at the racetrack as we behave in life. There's almost an analog. But we tend to be, you know, the same guy that goes into a supermarket and sees two cans of peas, one for 69 cents and one for 71, and takes the 69 cent can of peas, or the guy who receives, you know, reads Consumer Reports when he goes out to buy a washing machine. That same guy goes to the racetrack, and it's only money. He gets to the racetrack, it's only money. What the hell, I got $50 off, you know, either I'll win or I'll blow my $50 on my own. Like, that's his attitude. Now, is that a winning attitude? I don't know. I don't know if it's a losing attitude, but it's not certainly a representative attitude of a businessman. Now, if you went out there and you said, my bankroll is X dollars, and I want to earn, you know, so much as my daily goal, I want to make $100 or $200 or $300 a day at the races, and I have four opportunities today, I think, depending on, of course, what the odds will show. Is that a different, who do you think is in a better position to win in the long haul? Just by having a different attitude. All right, now let's go from attitude to looking at race information in just a little different way than the average bear does. Now, one of the interesting things you'll find, and I think Howard started to mention it, back in 1960, the public was right about 33% of the time on its favorites. the top two favorites came in about 54 point something percent, pretty close to 55%. All right, that was 1960. Now, how many books about handicapping were written prior to 1960? With the exception of Robert Sanders' Doust, very few, right? So there wasn't very much information, was there? Now, as of the 70s and 80s, there's a proliferation of books, right? And there's much, much, much good data out there. You know what the public's performance is now? In wins, about 32, and two horses, it's about 50. They've actually gone down, the performance. And yet, the information has gone up. Interesting, huh? Interesting. In other words, here we're bombarded with information, and yet our proficiency suffered. So maybe information alone isn't the answer. Maybe it isn't. And we're going to make the argument that you can divest yourself of a lot of worry and a lot of concern about things like jockeys, trainers, stable connections, and things like this, and even recency in some cases, and surface in other cases. We're going to try to, in a way, unclutter you, and what we'd like you to focus on is the actual physics of horses running. Now, one of the things you'll find out about horses is they're creatures of habit. They really are, and they tend not to alter their running styles very much. The ones that can alter their running styles more so than others tend to be very, very classy horses. Classy horses run fast early and fast late. But you see, remember this, there's only one or two races a day on a card that have classy animals. What's your bread and butter at the racetrack? Claimers and mid-grain allowances and low-grain allowances, right? So a minority of the races that you're going to be betting on what you call really classy animals, right? So you see, the long and short of it is that really, the bread and butter races are the claiming races and the allowance races. That's not to say you can't make opportunities in stakes races, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is you don't have to worry because the majority of your opportunity is going to come from the most predictable horses. What are the least predictable horses on the racetrack? Maidens? Not necessarily. Maiden first-time starters, maybe. And maybe maiden claimers. How about maiden specialists after they've had a few races? Are they pretty predictable? Are two-year-olds in December pretty predictable? You bet they are. You bet they are. All right, so, you know, you have to qualify that. I, for one, like maiden races very much. Okay, I have to like them. The reason I got interested in them was because of the pick six. All right, so I didn't have a methodology for them. In any case, let's start looking at the data in a little different way. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce you to some concepts, and they got to do with pace. First, let me ask you this. Here are two horses ran on the same day in different races. Horse A ran a 6-furlong race in 22 first quarter, 45 to the half, and 110, final time. Horse B ran a 23, 46, 110. The speed handicapper has a dilemma. He puts these horses exactly equal, doesn't he? Same day, same variant, same surface, right? Okay, what does the speed handicapper do with this data? Yeah, his final time is the same, so they should dead heat, right? Okay, now, the pace handicapper looks at this data a little differently. By the way, if this were the situation, which is the more likely horse to win the race? Funny you mention A. What track are we playing now? The answer is, it depends on where they're running. If these horses are running at the fairgrounds in New Orleans, I'll pick B every time. If these horses are running at Hollywood Park, I'll pick B. Okay. If these horses are running at Delmar, I'll pick B. If these horses are running Santa Anita, I'll pick A. You know why? Yeah, Santa Anita is an early pace track. And this horse has certainly the better early pace. Right. Full second. Okay. However, this horse is your sustained pace horse. What did this horse close in? 24 seconds, right? That's pretty good. 24 second quarter, that's pretty good. This one did a what? 25. So this is your, all right, well, any case. Okay, so some of these things that have been mysteries, all right, some of these speed handicapping situations when you involve yourself with final time kind of get blurry. So what we'd like to do is look at data a little differently. You all have a sheet, or maybe some of you don't have it with you, but you've already heard this. Is a sheet that has definitions and examples. Howard's going to give you an overview of the methodology. He's going to be using terms. He's going to be using terms like early pace, sustained pace, factor W, early energy, late energy, things like this. Now, everything that we'll talk about in the methodology up to the concept of energy has all been said before by Huey Moll and others, Hugh Matheson, Sam the Feet Per Second Man, Sedgwick, and others. The genius of Dr. Sarton is the concept of energy. The concept of energy. And I want you to think about it for a second. Think about you actually running a race. If you were running a long race and you started out like a sprinter, what would happen to you at the end? Yeah, you right. Okay, now, one of the things that we see all the time is we see cheap speed win. We see horses get out on the lead and run a 46 half and nobody catches them. And they just waltz on home. And the reason is, if you do run slow and you let the pace get too far away from you, you just haven't got enough room to catch up, right? Conversely, if you start out like a ball of fire, the chances are you won't have the energy to finish. So what we want to concern ourselves with is that balance of what it takes. See, a racetrack demands a certain energy for a horse to win, and we'll show you how to measure this. Okay, something I hope is kind of intuitive, and it feels good. I mean, the concept of energy, the idea of experience, it's kind of like having a bucket, and you're going to eventually empty this bucket, but how you do it? Do you turn it over all at once, or do you do it very slow, or, and believe it or not, most horses turn their bucket over the same way just about every time, and they become rather predictable when we understand the concepts of energy. Now, the predictable components of pace are early pace,